With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is an Unspoiled Network podcast.
In this episode, Frank steals the birthday present of a little girl from her daddy. What's with that, Frank? Welcome to Undeclared the Punisher. Hey, Jamie.
Hi.
How could he be so rude?
What are you talking about?
Do you remember what Frank got to use in the heist of the cars?
No. What did I miss?
Bright pink gun.
Oh, the gun. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. For a second, I thought you were talking about the wrong episode, and I was like, oh, shit, do I tell her?
No, I'm not that bad, I swear.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I'm on board now. Got it.
Okay, cool.
Bright pink rifle.
Yes, it was so pink.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, since you've liked a lot of the other shows from Marvel, that you might have recognized the man in the scene with Frank at the beginning.
Turk, yeah.
Hooray for Turk!
Oh, hooray is giving him a little too much accolade. It's more like, hey, it's Turk.
He's in Stranger Things as well, so...
He is?
Yeah, he's one of the deputies.
Oh my god! He totally is!
Yeah.
Wow. Costuming does a lot, because I didn't even put those two people as the same person.
Which is crazy, right?
Now I see it, but right? Yeah, like costuming does a lot to change how he carries himself.
Oh, yeah. And on top of which is a completely different setting.
Hell's yeah.
Kitchen versus rural Indiana.
Yeah, I just, wow.
Yeah, so Turk, king of the Netflix shows, really.
Well, also, king, giving him a little credit. He doesn't entirely deserve, but he's making his way around the Netflix shows.
He is the thread that ties it all together, maybe? We'll go with it. I don't know. I always, for some reason, he's like a friend from high school that you don't talk to, really. But if you go into town and you see him, you're not upset about it. You say hi.
You must have liked more people that you went to high school with than I did.
Oh, no, I didn't. I was trying to come up with
most people, if I were to run into them that I went to high school with, I would probably try to hide and avoid talking to them at all.
I don't think most of them would recognize me, so that works out well for me.
Mm.
But yeah, Turk. It's Turk. I like recognizing things. I don't know.
I totally knew it was Turk right away. Who else would have guns?
Did you think that Frank was going to kill him in that scene?
No, because, well, Turk is not a good guy. He's not on the level of bad guy that I think that Frank would really care about. Plus, he could probably use him again later.
Yeah, because if Turk is nothing, he is a source of information for every single person in all of these shows.
Yeah, you don't want to get rid of your CI, for lack of a better term. He's got a use. And, you know, maybe that'll bring us closer to seeing maybe an appearance from Matthew.
Aww,
I don't know. Or Jessica. Turk wasn't in Jessica Jones.
No, but he was in Luke Cage.
Yeah, but those two haven't even really been hanging out.
No. It would be entertaining to see what Luke Cage and Frank would say to each other. That would be an awkward conversation.
Yeah. It would also be a hard fight for Frank to win.
Yes. And I don't think that Frank would necessarily want to fight him.
Probably not.
Nah. So what ends up happening is that Turk got screwed out of the weapons deal he was supposed to have. And
yes,
Micro had told Frank, hey, this is where you can get this lot of weapons. He says an Ithaca, Saw, M4, M40, ammo and grenades. And none of it was there. And the way that Micro had been tracking it down was hacking into the NYPD emails, which is terrifying if you think about it. And Frank is furious.
But why didn't Micro, well, I guess he wouldn't think to look in Homeland Security. He wouldn't necessarily think to look in the Homeland Security files because they wouldn't normally be doing something like this. Or would they? It's national security. Why wouldn't you think of that?
Well, and it's also different agencies that are doing different deals at the same time. So it's hard to know who's working with who and at what point.
Yeah, but it's short-sighted to only search the NYPD.
And I think that's fair that Frank is pissed at him because this is what he's supposed to do. With a pink Ruger and no ammo? Is that what you want to do, Lieberman? Huh? He's a little testy.
Frank also, for all the planning that he can do and does well, it's all short-term. He wants to do this right now and it'll be done. He has to look at the bigger picture and factor in contingencies, which he does quickly once he knows what he needs to know. But he needs to settle down his temper a little bit and not be mad that this guy who he's forcing to do this with him on his terms.
Forcing is an interesting way to, at the end of the day, Lieberman went to Castle.
Yeah, but Frank is dictating the terms of how this partnership is going to go and not considering that sometimes information doesn't come to you as quickly as you want it to. If you're hacking into an organization's files, it's not as fast as going and holding a gun to a person's head. And making them tell you what you need to know or else you will get a bullet in your brain.
And it's also strange considering he's coming from the place where they've already talked about the fact that information was usually bullshit. He was working, quote unquote, mm-hmm. in Kandahar, where all the information was kind of up for grabs. And yet somehow magically he's expecting David to be perfect with every single thing that he says he's going to do.
He just needs to take a step back and have a little bit of patience, because going into something with only partial information or even what you think is all the information, you're still not factoring in how somebody might react to having their comms suddenly blasted with music and they can't seem to get that to stop. And you're not factoring that maybe somebody's going to jump in their car and chase you. Like, you have to think of all the things that could happen and be prepared for every eventuality. I would imagine when he goes in a situation like he was in a Kandahar, where he knew this most likely is an ambush, mm-hmm. he still went into it with a preparation of this could happen, this could happen, this could happen, this could happen. And how you react to each of those things, you're trained as a soldier, I think, to know how to pivot. If one thing doesn't go exactly the way you're expecting, you can pivot to, okay, but then we'll do this.
Yeah.
In this situation, he didn't have any of that. He just expected this to go off without a hitch. And instead, it was a mess, almost. He almost killed someone.
I don't think in this first scene where he's like, look, I got a fucking pink gun. This is awesome. I don't think he expected it to go perfectly. I think he expected it to fuck up. And he was mad because he thinks he's right. That Lieberman is full of bullshit and he just doesn't trust this guy. And he's pissed that this is all he has, which is unfair. But Frank is not quite known for somebody who is going to be 100% fair.
Or 20% fair.
Or 20% fair, or ever have patience ever at this point.
Seems the only people he has any kind of patience with is Curtis and Sarah.
Yeah.
Want to talk about that?
Okay, so
the Sarah thing?
Ooh, I want to hear what you have to say about the Sarah thing.
I like that he didn't listen to the voicemail. He just handed it over to David. He was snarky with, oh, who's that? Oh, your wife. But then he gives the phone over and they listen to it on speaker and it's nothing. It's just you have to sign some papers. And he goes over there, probably knowing full well that David can access. He's not stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he knows that David has bugged his own house.
Yeah, he's probably seen David watch his family.
I don't think he has.
Oh, really?
Because David was watching his family and then Frank got there and he switched the screen. I get the impression that Frank maybe hasn't seen it yet. But he also knows that David is who he is and probably either has listening bugs or probably has cameras somewhere. He knows because David showed up there when Frank was there. So he knows there's something in place. So he goes over there, and instead of just signing the papers and leaving, he inserts himself into the situation of, well, here, let me help you with this garbage disposal. And then chit-chatting with Sarah. And, oh, what if I fix your taillight or your headlight or whatever? What are you doing? What is he doing? Is he actually being helpful to her, or is he trying to poke at a wound that David has and exert some kind of dominance? I have access to your wife and you don't. I'm just confused. Is he being nice, or is he also being a dick?
Well, I would say that whatever he's doing, what it's working out for Sarah in the short term is helpful.
Yes, it's a double-edged thing that he's doing. Because I think he genuinely wants to help her with these little things. Let me take care of the headlight. There's no reason for you to have to fight with your insurance company. But at the same time, he knows that David's going to see this and it's going to hurt him. At least that's how I took it. It's two things at once. It's I'm helping you because this was my fault and you shouldn't have to deal with the bullshit involved. But I'm also showing him who's really in charge here. Yeah. Look at the access I have to your family.
Yeah. And it's a very strange sort of thing because David actually puts a halt on everything until Frank goes to help his wife.
Yeah. Because David doesn't want her to have to deal with any kind of stupid bullshit that she shouldn't have to because Frank was trying to get to him.
Yeah. No.
I totally get that. I just don't think that David thought it completely through. Now I have to sit here and watch this guy talking with my wife about me and interacting with my kids and being in my home where I can't go, and it hurts, and he's lingering and he's finding new reasons to be there. What are you doing, Frank? I don't think that he's trying to hook up with David's wife.
No. Do you think he thinks of her that way, though?
Maybe a little, as much as he thinks of any woman in that way. I don't think he's quite at a point where he's ready to forget his wife. And you would have to be able to forget the kind of pain that he's driven by. I would be surprised.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that he provoked Sarah so that David could hear her defend him?
No, I think when he said what he said about David, it was because he knows that it was more jab at David.
Yeah.
Knows that David's listening. And then when she reacted that way, it snapped him out of it. Oh, yeah, right. She's not.
She's a real person.
Yeah. She's not somebody I can just mess with and not get a reaction out of. She can be mad at her husband, but he was her husband. And she loved him and she thinks he's dead.
Yeah.
Side note, can you hear my cat snoring?
No. Can you hear all the trucks downshifting on the highway?
No.
Okay, good. Then we're even.
My cat is snoring so loud, I was sure that the mic was picking it up.
No. If you can't hear, seriously, trucks downshifting on the highway. Yay for well-directed microphones, guys. That's good.
All right, back to the show.
And when he decides to help out with the garbage disposal, it's because Leo is getting all stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wondered if he decided to do that because, well, garbage disposals and small children, not my favorite thing to put together.
Maybe, and maybe also because here's this little girl who probably reminds him of his daughter, who was very capable and smart, and Frank's good with kids from what we've seen of his memories, except for that time he grabbed his kid by the face. I don't know. I don't think that when he went to help Leo, it's Leo. I wasn't sure if it was Leo or Leah.
Yeah, I thought it was Leah for the longest time, and then I turned on the closed captioning because it was driving me nuts. It's Leo.
Okay. When he went to help her, I think that was just his natural instinct. Let me help you. He also still finds ways to jab at David in there. I think it's not until he offers to fix the taillight that I was like, all right, Frank, you're dragging this out and staying a little too long.
Do you want me to tell you what I think that was?
Yeah.
Him staying off the grid.
How so?
Because he had to sign a piece of paper with his name on it that was supposed to be checked.
Okay.
That was my first thought. He's gonna what now? Sign a legal document now? What? Huh?
But he has a fake passport and fake ID. Curtis got all of that made for him. So it would still kind of check out, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
No, you're probably right.
That was what I came from it, but I also thought it was weird that he was wanting to be near that normalcy almost.
I think there's a lot of layers in that scene.
Yeah.
I think it reminds him of who he used to be, what his life used to be, and what he lost.
He can actually smile and make a joke with a little kid.
Yeah. I just think that underneath all of that, there's also this middle finger to David. Maybe that's just me.
No, I think that there's a little bit of that. There's always going to be that jealousy.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, Frank is desperately jealous of David.
Well, and very angry at him because you have this. You put yourself in a situation where you are alive and you can get your family back, and I can't. You put your family at risk. I didn't intentionally put my family at risk, and they got murdered. But David did intentionally put his family at risk because he put himself at risk.
Yeah, and I don't think he realized what that would do to everybody else.
No, he thought he was doing the right thing, but
I think he thought it was only going to hurt him.
Yeah, and Frank's family died because he was doing what he thought was his job, and they wanted to take him out, which I don't know why yet. Because he knew too much? I don't know. Again, maybe I need to go back and rewatch at least that one episode of Daredevil where he is with Schoonover. Because maybe I don't remember what was said there.
I will tell you that you don't necessarily need to watch it.
I know they wanted to kill Frank, but why did they want to kill Frank? Or is that something I still am going to find out in this?
You want to keep watching.
Okay, my point is, Frank's family was killed because of something he did. Mm-hmm. That he thought he was just following orders and they were taking him out, as far as I know so far. And David's family was put at risk because of something he did, used his quote death to keep them safe, but they're still alive. And if he manages to take down this whole organization that targeted him, he can go back to his family.
Yep.
They may be mad at him, but they'll forgive him because he's alive. Frank doesn't get that. He doesn't get his family back at the end of this.
Nope.
And I would imagine that that makes him mad sometimes, that he's with these great people. The son is questionable, but he's at that age. But he's with these people that they will get their dad back maybe at the end of this. And at the end of all of this, I don't get this again.
There's a chance I still for Sunday dinners anything. And trips to the merry-go-round.
Yeah. Frank still will be with nothing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that makes him really mad. And a little petty.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something to have rubbed right into your nose. Has to sting worse than anything.
Mm-hmm.
Especially two kids and a wife in a house that's so close to yours.
Mm-hmm. Kids are around the same ages, one boy, one girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't hurt at all. Frank's a little testy. David's having to watch his family cope with his not death. And watch Frank get to be where he wants to be. That's fun for everyone. Good times. Poor people. And then that's pretty much we have for David's family.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Frank leaves them alone for an entire episode.
For now.
Now that Frank's done what David wants, they decide to go forward with step two of the plan. Now, my favorite part of... You know how I always have a line of the show for our Vampire Diaries show?
Yeah.
I really liked it in this one when they're going in and they're going to get the cars. And mm-hmm. Frank, of course, picks a Mustang.
Mm-hmm. And he says, always buy American.
Always buy American.
Burf.
It was hilarious to me because what's the likelihood that Frank will ever buy anything at this point?
Well, he doesn't have to if he's going to go and kill everybody and steal a car.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he didn't kill everybody.
Oh, no, he left the guy who was on the verge of being killed alive, peeing yeah. himself.
Yes. And it was only by chance because the grenade was a dud.
I thought maybe that grenade was a dud, purposefully. Because Frank threw it at the guy who was tied to the chair.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the impression that maybe it was never actually going to go off. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
I kind of had the same suspicion. I kind of hope that because they were looking for grenades and didn't have any.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the pin being pulled out of a grenade in someone's hand is going to scare me enough that it doesn't need to be thrown.
No, I'd be fine with just whatever you want, dude. Please take the cars.
Yeah, and Frank's not going to throw a grenade at an innocent person who is tied up and blindfolded and was about to be killed.
Yes, horribly, no less.
Yeah.
And this is where we see Frank go off of mission.
Mm-hmm.
I think other than his helping Daredevil at one point, this is the first time that he has actually decided to kill people, not because they were part of the takedown of his family, but because they did terrible things.
He killed that mafia family. They didn't have anything to do with his thing.
They killed the mafia family, but it was all around protecting that one kid. It was somebody that he knew. It was somebody he cared about.
Yeah.
This was just some random person he's never met and does not know whether they're good or bad. and he went after them. And he's taking these tiny steps toward being what the comic book has as the Punisher, where at some point you run out of people to kill that had anything to do with your family, and you can't stop killing.
Right.
And this is what Karen is terrified is going to happen.
Well, then she's just going to look at him with that disappointed look on her face.
Stop dating vigilantes, Karen. This is a fairly easy thing to get away from.
Why do you have to hurt people?
I only kill them when they're in front of me. I don't go looking for them, so I'm not bad.
Oh, Matt. Is Matt up to that stuff again? I thought you got rid of the suit. Shut up, Karen.
I'm going to find a way to get Deborah Ann Wall on this show just so you can see these things.
She's wonderful.
I just don't
love Karen. I've listened to her on a number of podcasts. She's a very interesting, very smart, wonderful person, great actress. If she wasn't a good actress, I wouldn't be able to make fun of her because I'd just be like, ugh, actress is so bad. No, Deborah Ann Wall is great. Karen is annoying.
Yeah.
Because she plays her so well.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So Frank is going a little off mission to get what he needs, and it surprises the fuck out of David.
Also surprising David is the smell.
Yes, which is not a pleasant one.
I'm gonna take your word on that and not ask why you know.
That's a good plan.
It's possible that you've been doing things that I don't know about. Some kind of superhero, and you've been hiding it from me for the last year.
Perpetually sick girl.
I did like that David asks him, did you kill all of these people? And he says something like, not the one in the hall or something. Like, not
the one in the wheelbarrow.
Right, not the one in the wheelbarrow. Which is
the one that got tortured to death. So
yeah, he was still killing bad guys. Just not bad guys that are connected to his Kandahar thing.
Yeah, which is what David had said was okay. Okay, kill the Kandahar people. That's fine. Not the people of Kandahar. That's entirely different. Frank's response was, yeah, I did this because they did that.
Yep.
And this poor guy sitting in a chair who has pissed himself is listening to them bicker. And Frank takes the Mustang. The entire thing is just terrifying.
How did that guy get out?
Did he?
He left him tied up there.
He could have died that way.
Yeah.
We don't
least
know.
You could do is cut his binds before you speed off in your red penis machine.
It was so pretty, though.
Sure.
If you're going to have a Mustang on a show, it's got to be red. And if you're going to have a sports car that's American, it's got to be a Mustang.
No, it could be a Dodge Charger. Those are fucking beautiful.
They are gorgeous, but it's not as iconic, sadly.
Yes, I think it's a prettier car, though.
Yeah, I concur. I want one. But not really, but you know.
I don't, because I don't like to drive fast cars, and also they're massive, and I only like to drive small cars. But if I wanted that type of car, that's the one.
Mm-hmm.
That new redesigned Dodge Charger, I think, is gorgeous.
I'm going to try to wipe the drool off my face a little right now.
That and an Aston Martin are the only cars that I've ever been like, oh my god, that
Aston,
car.
You're a woman of style and taste.
Yeah.
We just got to get you the means. You'll be set.
No, still too fast and too big. It's not the kind of car for me. But if I were that type of person, those are the ones I'd want.
Frank picked his Mustang, and that's good for him. I miss my mm-hmm. Subaru. It's what we know.
What was Madonna driving? Was she driving a Charger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
It's a hot car.
That's our girl.
Yeah, she knows what's up.
So what'd you think of Madonna in this episode?
I always love Madonna. She's smart. I like a smart character. She knows something was fucked up. There's no reason why this should be happening. Something is up. That's a loop. We are being robbed.
Mm-hmm.
And then she chases him down. And then she recognizes Frank.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Yeah. She's pretty badass, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little surprised how completely she was just ignoring Stein in the first scene that they're in together.
She's not doing it because she's the one in charge, though. Wasn't she doing it because she was just focused on what she's reading?
Yeah.
I was surprised that I can't tell yet if she's going to heed to what's that guy's name?
Hernandez.
Rafi, right?
Yeah.
I can't tell if she's going to listen to what he told her to do or if she's going to just go with what she wants to do. It's hard to tell because she obviously wants to advance, but at the same time, she wants answers. She wants to figure out why this happened to her friend.
She wants justice.
Yeah. And I don't know if she's at a point yet where she's jaded enough or power hungry enough to say, well, I'm going to put aside this justice because I want to be the one in control. And the only way to do that is to let this go.
Well, and as she and Rafi both point out, if they had actually gotten the guns, it was going to keep a lot of people alive.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what are you willing to let go of personally to ensure that overall more is going to go correctly?
Yeah.
And I think that's just a legitimate question. It's the same thing that we were talking about with the editor, with Elson.
Yeah.
He fucked up one article because he wanted to make sure that he could continuously get good articles and have the right thing out there.
So this thing that she does to get the guns.
Yes.
That was not connected to her Zubair. That's not connected to that. This was the assignment that needed to be taken care of now.
Yes, this was Stein's baby, and she was there to help him with it and guide it.
And take it over and make all the changes for him.
And she was right. She needed to have looked at it beforehand to tell him what he needed to do so he did not look like a dick. She is not good at leading yet. I would right. hope in the future she gets better at it and understands when she should have been doing that. She did, however, do something Wolf never did to Stein.
Let him lead.
And compliment him.
Yeah. Wolf would never have let Stein run with this anyway. He would have taken it and given it to someone else.
Yeah. It worked out. She's not as bad as Wolf, but she needs to polish her edges, which is exactly, I think, what Rafi is trying to say to her.
Well, also, she's a woman who probably has had people walk all over her or take her ideas or take credit for her work or not let her speak.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is, the one in charge, and she can see where all of these things can be tweaked just a bit or organized in a different way so that nobody gets hurt and it functions better. Yes, she should have looked at it ahead of time, given those suggestions to Stein, let him rearrange it and not take credit for it. But I think sometimes when you're somebody who's female and has always been walked all over because that's how power and the world works, to have that opportunity to just step in and show how smart you are and how in control you are probably was too much to let go of.
I think it's also that she hasn't had to be in charge of anyone yet.
No, I think that too. It's a lot of things.
And as she talks about when she's talking to Stein about when she's giving him the compliments about and telling him about this guy who has been her mentor, is telling her about the racism that she's had to deal with mm-hmm. in DHS.
Yeah, I think all the things that she's had to deal with up to this point would lead to her, including having this thrust on her.
Yeah.
This position. She hasn't had time to work towards it to be the deputy director. She just became the director or the SAC. Maybe I should start taking notes so that I don't question what I remembered. if I'm paying enough attention.
Yeah, Rafi is a director and she's special agent in charge.
Right. She's been thrust into this. So she doesn't have practice really running the show.
And the amount of training that they give you when you finally get put into one of these positions would very quickly tell you don't do what she just did.
Yeah. But I think when you add it all together,
mm-hmm.
including her needing to prove to everybody in the room that she deserves to be in the position that she's in, it all leads to her jumping up, getting in front of everything, pointing out where the mistakes are publicly. She should have done it a little more subtly.
Yeah, I kind of feel like she doesn't think in ego quite as much in some ways.
That doesn't mean you don't act in it.
Yeah, no, but I mean, she doesn't think of that so that she just jumps in and says, here are where the problems are.
I would imagine that she probably would. She's probably done that in other situations
mm-hmm.
because she probably is used to being the one who has the more tactical mind or the better ideas or is the smartest person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
But in other situations, she would start to maybe not jump in front of the table the way she did, but from the table say, what if we put snipers here and here and have whoever's in charge go, we've got it, and shut her down because she's a woman, because she's not a white person, for all the reasons that these things happen to people all the time. So yeah. She's probably always exerted herself, but been silenced. And in this situation, she jumps up and exerts herself and nobody says anything because she's the one in charge. It ended up embarrassing her guy.
Yeah. I wonder, simply because she did, before Wolf, have somebody who had her back. When you have a situation where you have somebody like her who is going to jump in and make the suggestion and is in a place where the ego isn't important, the mission is important.
Mm-hmm.
Where people can do that. If she had had assignments where that was acceptable, and I've been in two places in my whole life where that's been the case, and oddly enough, the results were the best.
Shocking.
Oddly enough, when people cared about the end result and not who got the credit, it feels like she was very motivated and felt like everything was perfect. She seemed so damn happy, and then this one thing shattered it in Kandahar. This man's torture and death shook her to her core, and I kind of wonder if she was getting back into this rhythm that she used to have, where this was just what she did. She explained exactly what you needed to do, because it seemed so automatic for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, being a chick sucks sometimes. I don't know.
It can be rough.
But I felt so bad for Sam.
Yeah, I think the fact that she turned around and complimented him and let him run the show out in the field.
Yeah.
Even though she figured out that this was a loop and she just jumped in her car and took off, she still let him, what you guys are doing, you keep doing what you're doing, because she didn't know what the situation was.
Yeah. And they needed somebody to lead the group,
mm-hmm.
which Sam knows better than she does.
Yeah. I'm just curious, now that she knows that Frank is alive, how that's going to change what she's doing. Because it is.
Do you think she's going to remember that he's alive? Or do you think she's going to think she dreamed it?
No, I think she'll remember. It would seem pretty silly to introduce the idea of her knowing just so that there could be another four episodes where she doesn't.
Yeah, that would be a little annoying. But sometimes these shows get accused of being too slow.
That's true.
So I guess it'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last question for you is, what the fuck were she and Frank going to do until David went in and hit her car?
I don't know. One of them was going to have to be the chicken.
Seriously, I'm just sitting at work like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Seriously? I had the same question as David. It made no sense what they were doing.
I don't know how Frank thought they were going to get out of there. He told David to go ahead and that he would lose her.
Yeah.
But she was keeping up with him. So I don't know what he thought was going to happen. I guess it was just leading up to this game of chicken and then David crashing into that beautiful car.
Yeah. Which was very sad. Mm-hmm. And then Frank being the good guy and saving her.
Yeah.
Which had its moment, because that was a really nice reveal.
I wasn't surprised.
No.
Whoever's in that car is not your enemy. She's doing her job. You're stealing guns. You are the bad guy right now.
Yeah, and on top of which, your dude put her in danger.
Yeah, I would have been more surprised if Frank had just taken off and left her there in this car that eventually blew up.
Mm-hmm.
It was very in line with his whole thing, only bad guys thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave her injured in this car. I'm going to get her out of the way.
Which I appreciate, as do you, I'd assume.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, he wouldn't be too much of... Even anti-heroes need to do a good thing now and then.
Yeah. Does that lead us to Billy Russo?
Well, how are we going to get to Billy Russo, though?
I guess we have to talk about this jackass. He's going to get people killed.
Oh, that's what you think now?
Yes.
Okay.
He's not right.
He's not right?
He's not right.
No, he doesn't seem to be healthy.
No, he's not doing anything to help himself. The best thing he could do is re-enlist, and I don't know why he can't do that. But he seems to be most comfortable when he's in a situation where he's training and going to be some sort of soldier.
You don't think he'd Section 8 in about a second?
What does that mean?
He'd get kicked out for having problems.
But he seemed okay when he was actually at Anvil and doing those types of military exercises. And I don't mean physical exercises. I mean all of it. He seemed okay. When he doesn't seem okay is when that's taken away from him. When he's at his house and digging himself a foxhole or shooting at his dad or yelling at Billy.
But he shot at his dad because he had a nightmare.
That's what he says. He was freaking out. We didn't see him have a nightmare. We just saw him.
Well, he was sleeping and twitching in his sleep.
Oh, he was sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought he was just having an episode.
He was sleeping with his gun under his pillow, and then he woke and heard something and shot at it.
Okay. I didn't realize he was sleeping. I thought he was having the flashback episode. I don't know. I don't know why he's out of the military, but he seemed at his most comfortable when he was at Anvil. But as soon as Billy was like, hey, I just don't think that this is the right place for you.
Mm-hmm.
He immediately jumped to Curtis did this, didn't he? So now I'm worried about Curtis.
Okay.
Because this guy, he's a mess and he's not thinking clearly and he's placing blame on people who have, even though he's technically right. I don't know where he came to that conclusion, just because when Curtis was talking to him, he didn't even really question the idea of going to Anvil. Like, he didn't outright say like, oh, I don't think that's a good idea. He also didn't say, hey, I'm friends with a guy who runs it.
Yeah, but what did Billy know that nobody else should have known?
Foxhole.
Yeah. So Lewis has been digging a foxhole in his backyard so he can go to sleep.
But Billy covers for that really well and very quickly with, you think that we don't look into everybody who's applying?
And at the same time, who is he going to ask?
I guess. Still, it makes me worry about Curtis. And I didn't like him getting in Billy's face because, no. And also, Ben Barnes as British came out a lot in his speech to the recruits. A lot.
What'd you think of the speech?
It was fine. I'm going to be honest. I was not really listening because he's so pretty.
Would you like me to tell you the majority of it then?
Yes. I was just so transfixed with him. He's so pretty.
Oh my god, guys.
So I just don't care about those kinds of, like, you know, rallying the troops kind of things when it's not Jon Snow. I don't know. I'm sorry. I couldn't rewind because I was watching with my boyfriend, and so I was like, I'll just have to let it go.
Oh,
I know I drifted off.
I am trying to... Oh my.
Sorry.
Oh my, I'm just going to laugh a little bit at you.
I could have lied. And
I know, I appreciate
your
honesty.
It was great.
I appreciate your honesty. And so we're going to go through a little bit of what he said, which is basically explaining why people who come back from war would want to work at a place like Anvil. Each of you trained as part of the finest fighting force in the world. Now, what do you think that cost from the moment that you walked in the recruiting office to the moment that you took your first duty station? What do you think? I'll tell you. $50,000. And that's just for starters. Say you're a special forces. $150,000 minimum. Corpsmen? Add another $200,000. So this government, our country, the one that you all swore to protect, invested in you. And you all invested too. You invested time, your lives. Ask yourself, what are you doing with that investment? Is anybody here making $100,000 a year? You making $50,000? $40,000? Why? Why is that? Is that because you're not worth the investment? No. It's because your skills are not matched to the tasks available to you here at home. It's that simple. You are fighters. And here at Anvil, you have the opportunity to fight for a living. And you will be well compensated. Now, I know, I'm not here offering you just money. I mean, not a single one of us joined up to make a fortune, right? It's because we didn't want our lives to just be gray. We wanted them to mean something. We wanted them to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And here at Anvil, if you are recruited, you will find that something. A new brotherhood to call your own. Something to fight for. To live for, even.
Okay, I remember a lot of that. So, what do organizations like Anvil do exactly?
They often provide security and help with infrastructure in places that aren't equipped for their governments to handle that. Whether it be something like Katrina or any other kind of natural disaster or in a war-torn area.
Okay.
They fill in the gaps where there isn't enough military or government assistance. That's why they contracted out.
So would Billy have taken Lewis if Curtis hadn't talked to him?
Yes.
So he doesn't do his due diligence to find out how well equipped mentally these people are.
I think that it would be very difficult to find out about a lot of people, because the one thing that the federal government does, and I think a lot of state governments do too, is as long as you don't take any medicine, you don't have to admit to anything.
Well, if you're not taking medicine and you need it, mm-hmm. you're gonna stay sick.
Yes, if you have a diagnosis of specific types, or if you're taking medicine, or both, of course, you cannot get certain security clearances. However, if you steer away from being diagnosed or taking those medicines, they cannot force you to go through those things as a civilian to get those clearances.
Did you see the thing that I posted on your Facebook wall last night?
Usually I do. I have a shitty memory, though.
It was part of a TED Talk that Adam Driver did.
Yes.
Did you watch that?
I have watched it before. I didn't watch it again last night.
Okay. Because many people don't realize that Adam Driver was a Marine.
That's Kylo Ren, for you guys who don't know who Adam Driver is.
Yeah. And he did this TED Talk because he started an organization. I can't remember the name of it, but it's basically because he came out of the military. And he doesn't go into a lot of detail in this part of the talk that I saw, but he talks about how he just didn't know how to process or deal with what he was feeling because he'd basically been taught not to pay attention to it. And then he started drama school, and everything he learned in drama school helped him get in touch with his emotions. And that helped him deal with what he had experienced when he was in the Marines. So he started this organization where actors will go and put on, it's not even a play, because he says they just sit there and they just read from a play. Mm-hmm. They're just reading the words, and they do it for guys in the military or people in the military. I don't want to just say guys. So that what they're experiencing are the words, and they can maybe get in touch with some of their own emotions, and how he found that it really helped him be okay in a lot of ways, and how he's hoping that bringing the arts to the armed forces will help them either while they're in or when they get out. And I just thought that was really interesting. The idea of getting in touch with your emotions when you've basically had to push them aside so that you could do this job.
Yeah.
And he said he didn't even know until he started drama school that he was blocking so much. I found it fascinating.
It's amazing what, particularly the kind of societies that we have within the United States, the culture that we have that ends up being drawn toward the military is one where most people aren't allowed to be emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they do, it can lead to death.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you see a lot of things where a CEO or somebody will be super angry. And that's not to say that that doesn't happen, but somebody who is going to be angry as their outlet for emotion is going to get people killed just as fast as somebody who's crying.
Mm-hmm.
It is a place where you have to, much like, say, a surgeon has to stop feeling to treat a patient and do the right thing. They just have to stop feeling.
Yeah.
But what do you do after that? There's a lot of reasons why people who are in specific professions or specific areas end up either having some sort of internal mental illness or an addiction, which is now being considered an illness that sets in because of that requirement to turn off emotions.
Right. And it doesn't actually stop the emotions from existing.
Yeah, they're there, and they does. It totally does.
They're there, and they torment you. As I read it when we were doing Band of Brothers, and I was reading some of these other books, so many of these guys would come back, and they didn't know how to talk about what they'd experienced, or even that they could talk about it, and it presented itself in them having constant nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
About killing Nazis or situations they'd been in or jumping out of the airplane and their chute not opening because they didn't know how to process any of this. They didn't know they had no outlet for it. So that stuff doesn't go away. And it totally makes sense that so many people, or even in the context of this show, that Lewis is having so many problems because he does not know how to talk about this stuff except with people who were there or have experienced something similar.
Yeah.
But the group doesn't really help him because he still doesn't know how to talk about it. He's just angry, and he's focusing his anger on the one thing, which is how he was let down by his government in this situation where they said that these guys made a mistake and were killed by an ambush. He's put all of his anger there, and he's not dealing with any of the other stuff, and he's not letting the group do what it should do and help him get all of that processed and out and discussed and dealt with. And so he's going for this thing, this anvil thing, where he can be part of a group again and he can be out there doing this thing again. And when if he's doing this thing, he doesn't have to think about any of this stuff and his nightmares will end and he won't need to sleep in a foxhole because he'll be back in a situation where everybody understands what's happening right now because we're only dealing with right now. We're not dealing with what we feel at all.
And everything is going to be perfect because no one will ever make a mistake again.
Which, please, unrealistic.
I know, but that's, I mean, I think that's exactly why Curtis said, hey, get him out.
Yeah, because most likely he would be the one that would make a mistake because he's not okay.
Or even if he didn't, as soon as that mistake is made, his reaction to it is going to be potentially catastrophic.
Yeah, and Curtis is looking out for him, but he's too blind to see that right now because he just wants to not feel these things anymore.
Yeah, he's comfortable with anger as a feeling, which makes sense. That's what we've trained a lot of men, that that's the emotion they're allowed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's all he can handle right now. And it doesn't seem like his dad is that person who did this to him by any means.
No, I think it's society and probably the military.
Yeah, because his father seems...
No, his dad immediately hugged him and was like, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, if his dad was somebody who didn't use emotion, he wouldn't have hugged his kid. He would have just gotten mad.
I really like that they have such a good father in this to show that it does not matter necessarily how good the family is. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not being there for that person whom you care for.
No, it's just hard to know how to be there for somebody who cannot express to you what they need and what they're feeling.
And you can't fix another person.
Right.
Poor Lewis's dad calling Curtis to try and get his son some help.
If something happens to Curtis, I am not going to be happy.
I guess we'll have to see. I mean, he did get that fake leg.
Oh, yeah. Got it. They gave it to him for nothing. Didn't have to lose anything for it. Certainly didn't have to process all of his shit while he had to deal with also having a fake leg and wrapping his head around that new way of living. Yeah, no, Curtis is fine just because he seems fine now.
Did it seem like Curtis had heard that before?
Yes, I'm sure he has heard it before. I'm sure that Lewis is not the first guy that he has tried to counsel in this group or one of these groups that has snapped at him that you have something to show for what you went through. You have that leg. Like, that's some kind of prize.
Yeah, it only takes 10 or 20 years off a person's life to have an amputation.
Yeah.
I know really weird-ass statistics. I do.
I started thinking about Wild Bill Garnier and how it didn't slow him down, but he was an exceptional person and not the best example.
And he also, the fact that he, okay, so guys, we're talking about Band of Brothers, and there were two men there who were in the same group, ended up together, and these two men went through nearly exactly the same thing, and they were best friends for the rest of their natural lives. Babe and Garnier ended up living near each other. So these two men who had seen... Yeah. Most of the same things, had each other to talk to. And nowadays, the likelihood of two men ever coming from the same unit and living in the same place after a military service is over is next to none.
Now, I mentioned that guy who was on Survivor, I think on last week's episode, who was a Marine vet, and he openly discussed the PTSD that he went through. Mm-hmm. He actually won.
Oh, good.
And...
Spoilers.
Whatever. It happened last week. At the reunion show, Jeff Probst surprised him with three of his friends who he hadn't seen in like 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Three of the guys that he served with. And I have to say, the fact that the four of them like immediately all hugged in one big group hug and they all were crying because they were so happy to see each other. And it just was on all of their faces, like everything that they had gone through and what they meant to each other. They talked about PTSD on the live show, very little because it was a live show. But they said, like, seeing Ben on this show, being open about what he had gone through, even in the smallest way that he was open about it. It does so much for other guys or women who served in the military who might not know how to get themselves out of what they're experiencing now that they're back. That it's so helpful to see somebody talking about it and see that they got through it. And that really struck a chord with me too. There just needs to be more of that.
Yeah, that's almost what Curtis is begging Billy to do.
How so?
To show, hey, you can get through all this stuff that happened to you. You can make good. You can even wear really nice suits.
Yeah, you can.
Later in the series, we hope to be joined by a gentleman who has had his own battle with combat PTSD, and I really am looking forward to speaking with that gentleman. It will be on a particular episode, and it should be coming up soon.
Well, I hope that I have a little preparation for that.
Oh, yes.
So I don't say something stupid.
He's one of the nicest people I know, and he just got accepted into art school.
Great!
Yes.
Adam Driver would probably very much approve of that.
I think actually this gentleman has shared that video as well.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to talking to him and seeing his perspective. He's a huge comic fan in general and just very, very nice person to speak with and very generous that he was willing to donate his time.
Come on our dumb podcast. Yeah. Thanks. I promise to not gush about Ben Barnes.
He's married. I'm sure he understands.
I would hope that anybody with eyes understands where I'm coming from.
Ben Barnes kind of looks like this guy I dated in summer camp. It's totally weird.
It took me forever to figure it out. Someone who looked like Jensen Ackles. I dated someone who looks like Ben Barnes. God.
What? Yeah, because clearly I'm good with relationships. Look, I go for looks. I'm shallow. Whatever. At least I'm honest about it.
I hooked up with a guy who looked like Ryan Gosling once.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. That was shallow. It wasn't because he was smart.
I like him big and stupid. I love that song. I'm going to stop right now before I go further. Oh, Lord.
Do we have more to talk about this episode?
I think that's it for this episode.
Okay.
Where do you think things are going from here?
I think Madani is going to, if she remembers that it was Frank who helped her, it's going to reignite that part of her investigation of how is Frank Castle related to this stuff. And I desperately do not want Curtis to get hurt by this Lewis kid who needs to be locked in a basement until he cannot hurt Curtis.
Or, you know, given treatment that might include more than just a group therapy.
Locked in a basement so he cannot hurt Curtis. Leave Curtis alone. I don't know. I don't know where the show is going. You know that I don't try to figure things out
ahead of time. I just figured it would be good to get a couple of thoughts out of you. See where you think that things are going around the corner.
Mostly because I have watched TV before. I expect Madani to start following some little threads that she has. But beyond that, I don't know because I have no guesses of what Frank and Lieberman are going to do.
I have trouble deciding what to call the micro character.
Oh, in my head, he's Lieberman.
Is it David? Is it Lieberman? Is it micro? But it's always Frank. Frank is always Frank.
Yeah, well, because we can't call him the Punisher.
Well, you could call him Castle. I think Nathan Fillion ruined that for me, though.
Everybody calls him Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if people referred to him as Castle more often, I think that would just get stuck in my head. But everybody that knows him calls him Frank.
Yeah.
Including Karen.
Yes.
But with Lieberman, Frank calls him Lieberman.
Yeah.
So that sticks in my head.
Fair enough.
Just like Madani, we call her Madani. Her name is Dina.
Yeah, but nobody calls her that.
Her mom does.
Well, one would hope that her mother does not call her by her surname.
I just want her mother to narrate everything.
Oh my goodness, would she not be the best audiobook reader in the history of ever?
She has the greatest voice in the history of the world.
Would it make you happy to know that she will be in at least one more episode?
Yes, because I love her.
I will give you that as a spoiler. You will see her at least one more time.
Yay. Well, you don't cast her for nothing.
Yeah, you should cast her for everything.
Yeah, she's on another show, but I'm bored with that show. Wasn't her fault. Just a boring show.
Fair enough. As opposed to our show, which apparently is very interesting according to our latest review.
Ooh.
Yes. We got a review, 5 stars from the U.S. by Sal Karuba.
He's an unspoiled patron. Hi.
Hey. I found that a great way to watch a series is to take each episode at a time, spend a little time thinking about it, and then listen to a podcast like this one to see what others are thinking about it without getting spoiled. It really helps me to savor the feeling of the show and spread the enjoyment out over weeks as opposed to a single night of binging. Thanks, Sal.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you're enjoying the show.
Much appreciated. Anybody who wants to write a review even half as nice as that, you'll be my best friend too.
You'll only be my best friend if it's twice as nice as that. I'm very picky.
And now, Jamie, I'm going to be really mean to you. Do you happen to have the names of the patrons for this week?
I do. The new patrons for this week are Wallace Baker and Maria Bruce.
Yay, Maria! Our first
Yay,
review.
Maria.
And Wallace, you're a fantastic young man as well, I'm sure.
Yes.
Oh, also, since yesterday was it, happy birthday to Maria.
Oh, happy birthday, Maria. Thank you so much for being a patron of Unspoiled and enjoying our show.
And reviewing it.
Yes.
See what happens if you review and become a patron, guys? You get all sorts of crazy love.
We gush. So what's the next episode called?
The next episode is called Gunner.
Well, that does nothing.
Yeah, I didn't think it would help you too much.
It could be a gunner. It could be a person named Gunner. Okay, I got nothing.
Okay. Have we run across anyone with that name?
Not on the show, I don't think.
Okay.
Not that I recall. But like I said, I should take notes, but I don't. Just try to remember everything.
You're doing an excellent job because I have to take notes on everything and then also have a transcript in front of me to be able to do what you do without even blinking.
Things are different when I'm the one running the show. Believe me.
Speaking of which, our other two up and running shows are The Constant for Lost and Undeclared The Vampire Diaries.
Big crossover between these shows, guys. Big crossover.
Whenever I tell people what we're recording and we're doing two shows on the same day, people just look at me like I'm insane.
It's a bit of a whiplash to go from talking about the Vampire Diaries to talking about the Punisher.
I wanted to have a break in between, mostly for that reason, but also because I was thirsty.
It's also just out of necessity that we have to do two in one.
Be a patron. It's pretty awesome.
True fact. Check patreon.com/unspoiled.
If you'd like to just get a hold of us, the best places to go are on the Unspoiled page at Facebook and tag one of us, Jamie or Krista, or on Twitter at @undeclarepunish because Krista hasn't changed it.
What are you going to change it to?
I'm not, just because if somebody writes in or starts listening in the middle.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it that way even though it's bad. Your idea was better, but it's going to be @undeclarepunish.
It's all right.
Feel free to contact us. Follow. I write back.
I don't. I'm not allowed to read it.
No, she's not. It's kind of awesome, especially when I contact some of the actors and start talking to them. The guy who plays Ellison is very nice. It's very nice. So that's all I have. Do you have anything else, Jamie?
Nope, not this week.
Okay.
We hope that you guys had a Merry Christmas and are going to have a Happy New Year.
Welcome back, Frank.
Bye.
Ta-da.
That was an Unspoiled Network podcast.